So beginning with the first verse of this 29th Psalm, give unto the Lord, O ye mighty, give unto the Lord glory and strength. So as David observes these mighty claps of thunder and the bolts of lightning that accompany them, and with the tempest, these sights that ordinarily strike fear into the heart of man, the first thought he seems to have is that the Lord is demanding that which is his. Give unto the Lord. Now this doesn't mean that the Lord has need of something that we can supply him, that the Lord is lacking someplace and we can give him something that is ours to hold back and make God then have a need or a lack of something. No, God has all things. But there are certain things that are due to him, that should be given to him, in the way of praise and devotion and honor. So give unto the Lord, O ye mighty. And this phrase, O ye mighty, is interpreted by many to mean the angels themselves. Those that are the great and the mighty, that would maybe even be above the level of man. The greatest of the great, the angels. And of course this is not limited to angels. There are many interpreters who feel that this is talking about men, the greatest of the men, that no group of men are so high and so mighty as to not be obligated to give this thing that's due to God. And that as God brings about this terrible storm, this frightening and all-powerful display of his majesty and of his greatness and of his strength, that then this is a calling forth for man to recognize God and give that which is due to him. Give unto the Lord, O ye mighty. Give unto the Lord glory and strength. These are the things that are called upon to be given to him. The glory is his majesty. The fact that he is the king of the universe. He is the ruler of the universe. And this should be ascribed to him. This should be something that we continually recognize and that we live with this in our minds, and we act in such a way as to recognize this. So give unto the Lord glory and strength. He is the one that has all strength, all power. He is the one that's behind these great manifestations of the display of nature. As this mighty thunderstorm moves in and shakes the earth and causes all creatures to take note, God's behind it. He is the strength or the might that brings it about. So we're to ascribe unto God. We're to give God the position that puts him in this place of honor, or his displays his great majesty, and that shows that he has the strength. He further says in verse 2, give unto the Lord the glory due unto his name. Now here again, the word glory means honor. Give him the honor that's due unto his name. This is one of the reasons why that this demand for worship is made. It's because of the great name of God. He is the God. He is the one living God of all the universe. There is no other God. He is the one and only. He doesn't share this position with anyone. And so to have this name of being Jehovah, the God, the one God, is reason enough then to require that all give glory to him, that all give honor to him. This name, Jehovah, is the greatest name any being could ever have. No other being has it but the great God. And because of this name that he has, then this shows us what position he has. This shows us what honor, what glory is due unto him. In this psalm, the name Jehovah is mentioned 18 times. It's found twice in every verse except 3, and it's found once in 2 of those verses. I know of no other chapter in the whole Bible in which his name is used so frequently. So the name is a very important thing. The name tells us who he is, tells us what his position is, and just the thought of his name then should provoke the attitude of wanting to give honor to him, wanting to give the glory due unto his name. So this is calling forth for this to be done for him. And as we see these great manifestations of nature, this heavy clap of thunder, the great bolt of lightning, then this should provoke unto us to realize that there's a God behind all of this, a God that has honor due unto his name. He further says in verse 2, worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. So again, calling for worship being given to God homage due to this great God. Worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. Now, the beauty of holiness has several ways it can be interpreted. It first of all can mean the glorious sanctuary, which would be the holy and the most holy places of the tabernacle and later the temple. It also can refer to the great vestments that the priests wore. These were the holy clothing that they donned in order to render this worship to God. But it also has a very definite application to the inner holiness that man today has, this adorning of the heart. And so as we have a heart then, our mind, that comes to God in a holy state, a mind that has put out the sinful things of this life and has just simply concentrated upon the great God, upon His worship, upon His teaching, upon the things that He would have us to do to give Him worship today, then we can be in the beauty of holiness. Anything, of course, that is genuinely holy, anything that is God-like, has this beauty that doesn't compare with anything else. And so that's how He wants to be worshipped. He wants to be worshipped in the proper way, in the proper manner, in the proper attitude, that can all be included in this phrase, the beauty of holiness. And the command here is to worship the Lord. He does demand worship. It's not enough to say, oh, I recognize the great God and I have my own private little thing with Him. No, God demands worship. He demands worship in such a way that it can be described here as in the beauty of holiness. And that means it's going to be done in the way that He has prescribed it. Not in our way, not in the way that tradition is handed down, not in the way that just looks good to man, not in the way that the popular notion of the day is, but it's going to be in the way that He's prescribed, because that is the only way that we can know what holiness is. Holiness does not come from any other source other than God. And so if we have something that's in the beauty of holiness, we're going to be doing something that's in the way that God has prescribed. And of course, that is most important when it comes to worship. Our worship must be something that He's outlined for us to do, and it must be done in the way that He's outlined for us to do it. Otherwise, it is vain. It is teaching something for doctrine that it comes from the commandments of men, and it is not an acceptable worship. We'd like to note here that this psalm began with a demand that the mighty give unto the Lord what's due to Him, to give Him glory, and to give Him honor and worship. And so we've been talking about the reasons that this demand is made. First of all, in verse 2, he talked about His name, because of His name, this name Jehovah. He is supreme over all things, and He wears the name that indicates that He has His supremacy. So if He's able to wear this name, then He's due to have the glory. But we find further, beginning in verse 3 now, that the reason for this demand for homage to God is because of the fact that He is the sovereign over all things. He's the ruler. He is the king. He is the one that has the supreme authority in all areas of existence. And so because of this, He deserves to be then given honor, glory, praise, homage, give unto the Lord, O ye mighty, give unto the Lord glory and strength. So verse 3 says, the voice of the Lord is upon the waters. The Lord of glory thundereth. The Lord is upon many waters. Now this phrase, the voice of the Lord, no doubt is referring in this psalm to the thunder. It's found 7 times in this psalm. And of course, when we hear thunder, this is one of the mightiest sounds that the ear of man has ever heard. It's one of those sounds that we have no control over, but yet it definitely does get our attention. And it covers a large space. For miles and miles and miles, the thunder can be heard. So this is the most impressive sound, and it is attributed here to being the voice of the Lord. The voice of the Lord is upon the waters, some kind of body of water, maybe Lake Galilee, maybe even the Mediterranean Ocean. But he further says, the God of glory thundereth. And so he is again referring to thunder being like the voice of God and coming from God. And so this thunder then is referred to then as being an expression of the God of glory. He is the God of glory. The word glory here means praise, honor, distinction. And certainly God does occupy the position of distinction. He does deserve to have praise and honor given unto him. And so when he expresses this in this thunder, expresses his majesty, his unfathomable ability to be the ruler of all things, we take notice. And it says the Lord is upon many waters. Many waters here could very likely refer to the Mediterranean Ocean, because it was the largest body of water that Palestine could be connected with. And it just simply means that it matters not how majestic and great nature is, how difficult it is for man to control nature or for man to really survey all of nature. God is the ruler over the kingdom of nature. His sovereignty is over all things, and he certainly rules over this kingdom of nature. And so he demonstrates this by having his glory to thunder on the many waters. It is an awesome sight indeed to see a thunderstorm with the rain and the wind and the lightning and the loud claps of thunder. And to see this upon a body of water is a very impressive sight. It's a sight of power. It is a sight showing us very plainly that there are forces in this universe and forces of nature over which man has no control and over which man can only take cover from and observe with awesome wonder. So as we think of God being ruler over the kingdom of nature, we see his glory manifested in the displays of nature, and one of these is in the claps of thunder seen in the thunderstorms. But in verse 4, he further shows how that God is ruler over the kingdom of nature by his power. He says, "The voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is full of majesty." So this is a demonstration of power also. We have to know that there is a lot of energy behind the thing that produces this great clap of thunder. It is caused by the great forces of the lightning that's generated. And so this is not just some fake, false noise. This is a noise that's brought about as a result of great power. And the Lord is behind it. So the voice of the Lord is powerful. It is not just a reproduction of some sound that which man might produce today, but it is a reflection of great powerful forces of energy that are behind it. So the voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is full of majesty. He demonstrates his power here. We know then that this is a God that has mighty forces at his command. He's able to do and carry out whatever deeds he desires to have done, regardless of the energy required or the great amount of force that might be needed to do this. God has it all as his command. He is the God of power. And so the voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is full of majesty. This word for majesty means a title indicating grandeur, high position, high rank. It's a title used by kings and emperors and queens, and certainly is a title that applies to God. So as we hear this voice of his, this great clap of thunder, we feel the majesty, we feel the glory, we feel the power that God has. And that's what is demonstrated to the writer of this psalm as he observes the great noise made by the thunder, which he calls here the voice of the Lord.